Happy holidays, everyone, and hello. Call to order and roll call. So I call the meeting to order at 9:04 a.m. Who wants to do roll call?
Do it.
Molly? All right.
Tom DeBee?
Yeah.
Jean Christopher?
Yeah.
Arlene Zortman?
Here.
Lauren Sealy?
Here.
Sally? Right?
Sally.
Sealy. I always do that. I know it's so. And staff present, Harold Dominguez? Kendra Daniels. I'm just gonna name them.
I thought you were naming us.
That makes sense.
We are here.
I see for the recording. Harold Dominguez, Kendra Daniels, Molly O'Donnell, Lisa Gallinart, and Kathy Kim.
Sure, thank you so much. Item number two. Approval of the minutes from the November 15th, 2022 meeting. Do I have a motion?
Well, I sort of ran through them really fast and I didn't see anything major, so I will approve the minutes.
I'll second.
I would like to actually have a minor change to it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, I think it was in 4A. I think if we just have a little clarification that, because we talk about the rent increases for Hearthstone. So it says Hearthstone at Pover Crossing will increase 7.2%. The Lodge will increase 7.49%. Residents of both properties will be receiving communication saying the changes. And they will have a comment period where they can reach out to HUD representative directly. I think we might just want to say that it's a HUD increase and not necessarily an increase directly to the residents.
Yeah, because that may have changed actually, because they brought it down. They
didn't give us
the full request.
Well, I guess for the minutes.
But about the minutes, yeah, at the time, yeah. I think it was just kind of unclear.
Okay.
On that end.
Noted.
We'll
get that revised.
Any other changes? Or... All right, so let's vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously. Let's go on to number three, public invited to be heard. Anybody from the public?
I'm going to find somebody.
All right. Let's go on to item four, organizational updates. A, advisory board and member selection update.
This is just a quick statement, just the interviews that happened with Arlene and Jean and staff support occurred. We made recommendations to the Board of Commissioners and then they held interviews for all applicants on Saturday. And then the appointments are set for the 20th and I'm waiting to hear back from Michelle at what point the selected people get notified, or if it's happens
that's
at
next
the
week,
app.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's all. They're just hoping to have a little more detail, but I'll have to just report back if we have anything.
Excuse me. All right, let's go under five, development and project updates.
Okay, so we've got a lot of moving pieces going on. So Village Place. We held a resident meeting last Monday to give an update on what's next. The schedule is still on as it was as of last March when we pushed the construction to 2024. So we chatted about the survey that we put out to residents asking for their priorities of what they would like to see in the building addressed. And then those were due Friday. Have they been collected?
Yes, they've all been sent.
So we'll be summarizing those. And then just on last Thursday, the request for proposals period closes for architects. So we have interviews set up. We got five proposals. We're interviewing three between Friday and next Tuesday.
What ones are you guys interviewing?
We're going to be interviewing ALMS2S, ALMS2S.
How long are you in the cone of silence?
I'll be in the cone of silence.
Oh, okay.
Well, we had five applications, five proposals.
You can tell me
later. Yeah, well, let me just double check on that. Because we're, yes, the ranking process in college is easy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Harold. So we should have a selection next week and then work on contracting in January and send that contract to the board in January as well. Generally, we're ranking based on experience with senior properties, experience with LIHTC resyndications, overall qualifications and experience with tenant in place rehab, so, and cost is one factor. So that is moving right along. We are speaking with the existing investor here, WNC. We're working on, they're wishing to exit, and so we're gonna go ahead and exit them early in 2023 and not do it all at the same time in November when we're gonna do a new deal as well. So we're getting that sorted.
They're coming at the end of the month to come walk through.
To walk through. And then we are doing funding applications, trying to get as much funding together as possible. So you will probably see, I'll be putting out a request to neighboring communities, just seeing if they already have ideas for their PAB. I know it's 2023 and often if people put it out for competitive, they don't know for several months, but we know that we'll need more PAB. So we're gonna see if neighboring communities
are transformational affordable housing grants.
So we spoke with DOH about that. And first of all, we need to wait until we have a conceptual design and ready for our tax credit submittal in March, because they basically told us, I mean, they just don't see preservation and syndication as very transformational. And I said, well, this is the
street.
We've already started our marketing efforts on why that still makes sense. I wanted to put in the very first round, which was a notice of intent to apply December 10th, apply by January 1st. When we coordinated with them, they recommended that we wait until we have everything that we're going to put in with tax credit in March. I made the case and I said, this is the absolute poster child example project for why preservation is necessary. What happens when there was a rehab here, but it was nothing on the interiors, it was just critical systems. And so when you don't do a rehab for 30 some years, I mean, this is the exact reason why preservation is so critical. So I'm still planning on throwing in, but we don't know how successful it will be.
How old is this building?
1990. And it hasn't had an interior update since. So, we're gonna try.
So then we're seeking another investor if the other one wants to.
Yes. Yes, we're gonna start that process. Mm-hmm. So it's rolling right along. We are still on schedule. All of the architects' proposals are match up with our schedule as well, so it's looking pretty good there. And we have a market analysis happening for the CPWD building. The CPWD is interested in purchasing it, so we'll get that information and then start talks with them, because we've already separated that from the deal. So lots going on, though. I have CBD down here next, so that's good. So Zinnia, this is the permanent supportive housing over by the suites. They're doing gap funding. It's not a huge amount, but there is gap funding that they're looking for, and we've coordinated what the city can participate in on that. And the closing is set for about May at this point, and construction right after. They're in the thick of entitlements and getting everything figured out there for final details of site plan, like that type of thing. We were shooting to have the transfer of the property happen by the end of December. In reading the option agreement, the possibility is December 31st was really the deadline for the site plan review. So we're giving it an extra month or two to sort out exactly how the, I will get you an update. Anyway, we're still planning on transferring environmental. We have to do the environmental review before the transfer can occur, so we're gonna get that taken care of for DOH. And then do the transfer of the property in its own transaction ahead of the May closing. Everything else is moving there, though. We haven't heard about any new cost escalations on latest cost estimates, so everything else is just plugging along for May. Lots of work going on at the Hoover land as well. So this is the land that LHDC owns. We put out, we completed the process getting developer proposals for that. We went ahead and selected a developer, it's Penrose. And we're moving forward. We're gathering a bunch of information for them through this year, and then we're gonna kick off in full force next year with a goal to apply for tax credits in August as a first round. It might take more than, well, unless we go for, we'll see. We're still sorting out. We go non-competitive or then try for February 23, 9%. We're tailoring that now. In the meantime, we're talking with our city divisions to talk about what kind of opportunities we might be able to do on the ground floor there regarding, you know, community service type things that could benefit this family hub of a building.
Any word on the name?
So we're going to, we still haven't approached the Stewart family, okay. But that is what we're attempting to do, is okay. Go that route. And then, I mean, we haven't sorted all of this, but the Stewart family, if we're able to include some of these community services, that a lot of that is the Stewart family's main, you know, priority as well. So we'll see what opportunities might be there. Okay. And then finally, Recovery Cafe. So we have, we're working with Recovery Cafe to do an add-on at the Suites. And it is certainly not the easy route, but if we can make it work, the benefits would be so great. So we're really doing everything we can to make it work. You know, the investors all have to approve, and we haven't, I mean, primarily they seem favorable, but they always say, but we have to go through the attorney process, et cetera. And so they just closed on a request for proposals for architecture services as well last week and interviewed several firms on the 9th, and they're making a selection now. And then the first phase of that will be the feasibility study to make sure that this really is possible to build here, and we've built in our exit ramp. So if it's not feasible, that can still be covered by this CDBG COVID grant. That's still an eligible thing. And if we have to pivot, then they're keeping an eye out for properties to purchase just to have a plan B if needed. So we're still moving forward. It's working out, and we'll have a lot more information about exactly what's possible. It's a 6-week deliverable on that feasibility study, so it should be around the beginning of February.
Okay. And what's going to be the funding source for the operations of the Recovery Cafe?
That's a nonprofit.
Oh, okay. So yeah. We would just offer them space.
With ground lease, so we're just going to do. We're just going to do a book product, dollar ground lease.
Gotcha. Okay. And they would just provide the services to the residents?
Yeah.
And others in the community as well?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay.
So we've gone round and round on that one. I think the attorneys thought it would be easier if we didn't do the ground lease, but we did the full contracting to build it. And there's way too much risk for us on that side. Especially, it's really more on the city side because there's cost overruns. We'd have to absorb it. We don't, frankly, have the staff to manage another construction project, and I just think a ground lease is cleaner. Mm-hmm. And so we're just going to go that route.
Yeah. So we're meeting with Recovery Cafe next Tuesday to go over all those details.
So they'll build it.
Yep.
Okay. So we will grant the funds. We're going to support, you know, for just traditionally, you know, how we do for other grantees. We're helping them meet all the requirements. But they will be the owner of the architecture contract and construction contract.
I think they're eligible to apply for the other transformational homeless.
They are.
Grants.
And they also have been thinking about trying to use opioid money. I don't know what their plan is for that and trying to do that, but obviously
is
that's
a
topic. I don't know. We need to, that's what we're meeting on Tuesday to talk about all
that. It's not because we have the first round of opioids. I think we're voting on that this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So
this is through the city, or is it other
agency?
No, this
is the collaborative opioid dollars, because I'm on that board.
Okay.
So maybe not that.
So no, well, I mean, they could go in the next year's cycle.
Yeah. Okay. Which might make sense because we'll have real cost estimates by then.
So has there been anything done about the veterans' place, or is that just still kind of we're on hold?
You mean at
as far as
up here on Main Street, or at
on 12th and Main, or wherever it was? Yeah.
So they're interested in it. I think it's a timing equation for us. So we would need to get further down the road on Zinnia, because it's who's in the, I mean, so I talked to Mark, and we need to get together with Mark and his group to start talking through that process. But it's really the residents that we have in it and how all of that's going to work and transitioning them if they're interested in buying it.
So we're not just talking office space, we're talking the units as well.
So all of it, because I mean, it's we're all dealing with similar populations, and so that may make sense for a county. I mean, it's how many units are there?
10.
So we have 10 units, and so it's not a lot. And if we can get a cash infusion to support the broader housing authority mission, but yet they're still housing people that we would house anyway, then we think it makes sense. But they're still focused on getting that built out there, and so that's part of the issue too, is they want to get further along and get that operational.
I will mention that the city's sustainability teams are looking for a smaller apartment complex or multiplex to do. They have energy efficiency money that they need to spend, and we propose Briarwood. Also because Adam, the HCI's CDBG specialist, this is in our wheelhouse, doing rehabs for this type of thing, so we can help them because they have to income qualify, and they were going to find contractors. We're like, we have all that. So we're working with them to see if Briarwood can be their test case.
Who's that?
Susan.
Oh, Susan.
And Anna.
Yeah.
Person who works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, is there any other questions? That was kind of a quick run through of everything going on.
And will Recovery Cafe be its own standalone building, or will it be an add-on to the suites?
It has to be an add-on. It's going to be kind of like a breezeway, we were thinking.
Okay, all right.
But it has to officially touch the suites to be eligible for CBG.
Yeah.
Sure. I wish they would change that.
Yeah.
Make it a lot easier to spend CBG.
All right. Let's go on to number 6, items for input to the LHA Board of Commissioners.
Okay. So we're planning on taking Zinnia's property tax exemption policy to the board on January 31st. But that's just a heads up that would be coming. But really, we've had a couple of developments happen regarding property tax exemption partnerships, where we've had the owner of Copper Peak Apartments approach us because when they were first getting built several years ago, the prior LHA board denied them a property tax partnership because their units were, they have 12% units under 50% AMI and the rest are all 60. And the requirement at the time was 100% units under 50. So they didn't do it then. And then now they are reaching out to see if we would consider it after the fact, because I think there's a new board and we have a revised policy. So our policy as we wrote it and adopted back in February of this year, it's not built for anything but new development, because it's really accepting the fees at closing. Yeah. And assume, you know, you can edit the number of years of the compliance period. Like we did 4 years for Chrisman, because that's when we're how long we're in. 15 years typically for any other project. Right. So when we were considering this, the policy as we have it, which I printed copies in case anybody wants to reference what I'm going over here. So I'll hand these out. Here's the policy, and this is the template calculator, but with Chrisman filled in, just so you can see, it's really easier to see with a project filled in. The max threshold that we have written in is 20% of your units, at least 20% of your units at 50% AMI or below. And so this project would not, the Copper Peak does not fit in. They are above the threshold as it's written. So they are making the case that, we had to have 60% designated units for our financing at the time, but 40% of our units serve HCV tenants, much less than 50% AMI. So they're asking the Housing Authority to partner based on the population being served. We've been researching, why would we consider this?
I want a clarification. When you're saying 60% of their units, total units,
I'm
or
sorry.
60% of the units that go to?
So they have 12% of their units designated for 50% AMI or below, and the remainder is for 60% AMI.
Is it 100% affordable though?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So the, all
it's
of
100%
it is
affordable.
Okay.
But that's their unit mixes.
Okay.
So one of the things that came up in our joint retreat with the board / council is really getting more people to take vouchers. And so one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, putting a threshold, a minimum threshold of the number of voucher holders that they are, you know, willing to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And so setting, you have to meet or exceed the number of affordable units based on our affordable housing policy, which they would do, and then throw in a caveat that you need to take, at least 35% of your residents need to accept Longmont housing. Or we got to figure out the language on this.
Right.
But voucher holders, of which the majority are voucher holders from Longmont Housing Authority, or some version of that.
So they can't, so it'll be interesting because you can't deny a voucher holder necessarily, but there's just some landlords that just try to avoid it as much as possible.
They raise the rent high enough that
we can't deny
designate the units.
Yeah, I mean, they all play the game because there's someone that'll take them, right?
Right. So the question for this group, as I plan for what I'm going to present to the board January 31st, maybe it's just Zinnia under our current one, or do we want to think about our policy and how it's structured? Do we want to add in something regarding voucher holders? So they would not qualify, their unit mix would not qualify them currently, but he's asking for basically, but would you consider the fact that 40% of our households are earning less than 50% and on vouchers. And this is after, this is not for closing, this is partway through. They're just there.
The other thing that, since this is a legislative action, I would like to put in is some requirements to be in the crime-free multifamily housing.
Mm-hmm.
I would also like to have requirements about, actually enforcing the crime-free multifamily housing needs.
Yes.
Just because I know, that place in particular, you have a lot of issues. So, because it's a legislative action, I would like to put really robust requirements in terms of managing the properties. That way, if they don't do it, then they can lose their exemption, and it's helping many other aspects of it.
So we should be looking at some revisions for January, is what I'm hearing.
If they want to recommend that they do it,
right.
I would say we load on some other revisions on this to really help us manage other issues.
So this partnership policy only really contemplates a fee from LH to LHA.
Right.
To partner.
So I know where you're going, I think.
Yes.
The second piece of this agenda is that.
Yes.
So several things we're considering. Allowing this PAX exemption partnership for existing properties, not just new builds, adding on requirements, or considering HCV or maybe actual tenant AMI, one of the two, and then adding on like crime-free and any other thing else we think of. The second major piece that our policy doesn't have that many other example policies do have is a right of first refusal.
For both, right?
So we have run that question to our attorney, just what would it look like and what, anyway. Really what it is just, if we're gonna be putting in, giving you this benefit at the end of your compliance period, if you're not gonna stay affordable, then we should have a right of first refusal to keep the units affordable. So we don't have that in our policy currently. I think that when we were contemplating this early in the year, when Kathy was developing this in 2021, we were really thinking our partnership agents, it's Crispin is what we were really thinking right off the bat. And now it's really mushrooming a little bit into more than just that. It is a revenue source. The fee is a revenue source for us, a one time. And then, and we have an application fee that's supposed to cover our costs to implement the partnership, which really, if it's at closing, it's taken care of. But if it's not at closing, if it's in the middle of a property like this, then we would have attorney fees because we have to be a special limited partner on their ownership structure.
And they have to amend their documents.
Yep. So they'll have to do all of those things. That's what Copper Peak would have to do, all of that. It's not just a give us money and here you go, here's your exemption form. So that's what that fee, the $5,000 application fee, is intended to cover those costs that we would incur because of getting on the partnership. So those were the several things I was considering to add on to this policy.
Some things to consider if we're going to add on the right of first refusal and purchase option. The end of year compliance snafus that come up. Like, we're learning this now for a property that we want to build. The cost to acquire the property is the same as the cost to acquire the partnership space, to take over, like you guys are talking about doing with this one. And the way it was written was the real property value being assessed by a property appraiser, which they're valued differently. One is you're actually buying property, and the other one is you're just buying a partnership. Mm-hmm. So something to consider was, if we draft these, if we include this, is that, and then the ROFR, that just always creates a lot of issues. So I would just say put a lot of thought into how we want to word it now to avoid issues at the end of the compliance period.
Are you looking at policy revisions to Boulder County to address this, or?
Not for, I don't know. I just actually got a copy of our policy the other day from our executive director, because we have a lot of people asking us to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I just know from one that we joined in 2006, it was not well written to our definition.
Okay. So. Will you share yours? We might have it somewhere, if you don't mind. Yeah. That would be great. Because we pulled some examples to start seeing what the ROFR language looks like.
I've got another point of view on this, especially your comment about concrete. If we're going to get into partnership with somebody that's been in existence, I'd like to get feedback from the clients. What has the management style been like? What is it like living there? Just get it down to the nut. I'd like to know what kind of environment that management creates
are
there.
Creating?
But what kind of environment is management creating? Because I'm not interested in linking up with somebody that's got a rotten reputation, and they don't have the best reputation in town. And I would like to really cover the waterfront if we're going to get involved.
I was going to say, and if they're a CHAFA or LIHTC property, getting their last inspection reports and their last tax credit compliance reports to see their standings with CHAFA, because you don't want to get into a smaller building that has a bad reputation that CHAFA's looking for a new partner on, and then we're part of that bad deal.
That's what I'm saying. Let's cover the waterfront before we get involved legally. because, you know, money and asset and what have you is one thing, but what are we buying into? And what is our leverage for improving it?
So are you thinking at the right of first refusal time frame, not at the head of the partnership?
I would do it before we got involved.
Well,
we've got every right to look at what their history's been.
Well, we can definitely pull that. That is documentation we can pull and keep. In terms of doing a learning from residents at this early stage when we're thinking about the partnership, that might be a little.
Because we, even if we do this, we're not technically linked to them. We're just a special limited partner in their partnership agreement, so they're not really tied to us in any way. We don't own it.
We don't have responsibility over their management.
Yeah, I don't think they can give us legally tenant information.
So right first refusal, we could.
Yes, that would be part of the due diligence.
Yeah,
yes.
Part of the due diligence.
And we don't have to buy it if we don't want to.
Got it. Okay. But you understand where I'm coming
from?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think for an existing property, asking for that is certainly reasonable.
The CHAFA documentation.
Yeah, definitely. Or even whoever they're involved
with.
Funders.
But you'd want to know anyway, because the whole partnership would be based on them complying. And if they're not complying, you pull out with no detriment to you.
Right. And they most likely have to get all these people's or agency's approval to add us on as an SLP. So
yeah, I'm just a little gun shy of anything that has LHAs.
Right.
Okay.
So what's the benefit to the property after the fact of closing that? What are they use?
Property tax.
Property
tax.
That's it, right?
For this property, they paid in 2021
$258,000. That's cheap.
Yeah, it's very cheap.
Holy, how did they get it for that much money?
That's just what he said.
$16 million. Oh, my gosh. Is this the difference between one?
Oh, geez, that's cheap.
So,
yeah, it is.
And that's the other thing, is when you write in your ROFR or purchase option, you want it to be the tax-exempt price, because you want it valued at tax-exempt prices, not market price, because you don't want to pay more. They'll make more money if they sell at market rate, but we're not going to buy it for market.
Got a whole analysis here from Ben Doyle, though.
Yeah. Oh, he's got you. If you're working with Ben,
you're fine. I'm sure that's in here somewhere. I'm going to just digest it.
Yeah, Ben's great.
So I have a question, and it's really, I think, probably for new development, because I don't know how you could back it up and do it otherwise. So one of the things that we heard quite frequently, or I guess I should say I heard, with interviews was the no smoking sites. Now, I was up at Centerra not too long ago, and they've got a 50-foot, you know, you have to be 50 feet from the building for smoking rather than 25. If we go into new building, is there any way we can make it property-free rather than just building-free?
Don't know, because I think you have to have, so I'm going on this from an employer standpoint, and I think you have to have, I know as an employer, you have to have designated smoking sites for your employees. I would be willing to bet there's something in there for multifamily if you don't allow smoking in the units. You have to provide somewhere for them.
So Enterprise Green Communities, which is required for all LIHTC projects, does not allow the encouragement of smoking on the property. So we're not supposed to have a sign that says smoking area and an ashtray. That doesn't mean they can't smoke on the property, but we're not supposed to specifically encourage it. Granted, that opens its own can of worms. So you don't have ashtrays and you have some cigarette butts on the ground. But that's a interesting
one. Well, and the hard part of it is the impact that you have. So if you don't do it, I mean, A, you bring smoke. So then the impact that you have on the adjoining properties. And so one of the guys that commented against Zinnia is the adjoining property manager. And what he was commenting about is that too many people from LHA are going onto the property in the old plaza from the suites and activities on his property. Primarily, I think it's like smoking marijuana and stuff because you can't smoke marijuana on this property. And so you got to be cognizant of that too. So if you think of like if we did it at Fall River and Spring Creek, but then everybody leaves there and they're in the neighborhoods. And so you got to kind of balance all of those issues. Speaking of on that, he has posted and worked with Sarah. So he does have trespassing affidavit signed and they're getting the signs up. So we do need to tell the residents of the suites that if they're on that property, they will be trespassed. So, I mean, there's all of these things that you have to think of. But, you know, Molly's right. So you don't designate a smoking space, and then it's just a mess.
But then it's nice, not, it's yeah. good to have an outdoor seating area that is proper, distance away. That is a logical gathering place.
There's a big flower pot with sand in it that may not necessarily be an ashtray. But I think in the design of these, we can design them where they're intentionally further away so that you don't have that as you're coming in. Now, this area is interesting because the breezeway is not LHA.
It's
DDA. And so this area poses its own issues.
Is there a rule about no smoking within 25 feet of an entrance?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it is posted in the beginning of the breezeway, no smoking, and that's where
we still smoke. There.
Yes, we go mm-hmm. in.
Yeah. Oh, that's in place too.
Yeah.
I hope.
Yeah, I mean, like so in the summer we have rangers and stuff trying to. That's like trying to herd cats too.
Thanks for your feedback. I'm going to start working on some red lines, which you'll most likely see at the January meeting. By the way, your January meeting says the 17th on the bottom of this, but we had shifted to the 2nd. So it's actually the 10th, January 10th.
Okay.
And when Erica gets back, she'll send out our 2023 calendar appointments. So I'll shoot to have some red lines for the 10th. And so I'll go to the board on the 31st.
Let's go on to item number 7. Or did we cover the current request for partnership, right?
Yeah, that was all. Yeah,
that was all. Right. So 7 was the resident quality of life.
Where are we on the contract for 2023?
I think, I know, is that part of the
Yeah, so in that one, so we have funding that is coming in from transportation fund. That is part of, I think, the contract. And then we have health and human service funding, I believe, that comes in for VIA. Those recommendations are coming in next week at the city council meeting. And so once that's done, then they'll go into that contract and we'll probably take it month to month moving forward until we get the new contract done.
Okay, so you're maintaining the service then?
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Diane and I are working with VIA weekly on all that stuff. So the sign up sheets for the rest of the month are already in there.
Okay.
And
okay.
All right, item 8, LHA report, updated operations, occupancy report.
We got a small bump in occupancy. Briarwood filled up and the Hearthstone is completely full at the moment. We will be having a vacancy at the Briarwood due to a resident passing. Let's see. Aspen Meadows neighborhood, We have a pending eviction there that's not listed on here Friday from the event on Thanksgiving.
Is it hearing on Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Friday, 10 o'clock.
Okay.
Resident is still in the unit. There was police activity there last night, so I'm still waiting for the notes from Sarah for that unit, so I don't know what happened. I just said other agencies assist on my daily briefing.
Where did it come?
We have cameras watching. let's see. Fall River, some of these are PBB units, so we have the suites, Fall River, who both have PBB units. HCB is trying to fill them with the suites. We have a lot of vacancy, but MHP and LHA are running into the same issues. We're mailing out 20 packets and one person response.
Yeah.
I know Tracy and I are working on the suites to possibly start opening that wait list every 6 months so that we have good active names, because what MHP and us are both seeing is a lot of the people on the wait list are homeless. They don't update their addresses, or they're on general delivery. They're not checking their mail. Their caseworkers have lost contact with them. So by the time they come up, every contact way we have is dormant, but we still have to give them the weeks to week period to respond once mailing. Mm-hmm. So we're both talking about different ways. And like I said, Tracy and I are thinking almost for the suites, we'll need to open up every 6 months just to keep a good list and keep those filled. MHP has 4 units ready to go, and LHA has 3 ready to go. Managers are calling the wait list. I know Kat was calling after hours last night, still trying to get people because people just aren't answering or not interested.
Too low of income, found something already, not ready yet, got into a lease, they have to wait a year. So.
She called from 4 to 7 o'clock last night, just making calls. And this wait list is currently open.
Mm-hmm.
So here, yes.
Okay.
So we're trying to fill. The down units, we've added another unit at the suite, 7312. It's taken the record for the highest meth unit. When we did the eviction, there was stacks of foil. In the unit, meth was found in the unit, tested. So that one's going to be down for a while. 7114. They are trying to get that one back online by the end of the year so that it doesn't have to be reported to CHAPA on 8823 as a down unit. 305, that one is, the adjuster approved it. We're just working out some flooring issues with our vendor and in-house, just trying to figure out what's the best way to go forward. B2, we are pending their post-cleaning sampling reports. The first round cleaning did not get all of it. To the point we've removed the door and there is a boarding of the unit right now. Fall River, same issue. They had to go in and remove the window seals, even any extra porous surface they could find in the unit, trying to get that to pass.
So in terms of the people that were in these units, mm-hmm. how long were they in these units approximately? I mean, are we talking these are like long tenants?
No, so 7312, yeah. She was there from July to December 1st. Mm-hmm. And that one came in at 2,950 parts per million.
Mm-hmm.
With the suites, the ones
cooking.
This was the last one we did where the guns were on the bed.
Okay.
So they were in there just a few months. Some of these other ones, 108, he was there for 2 years. He was the only occupant in that unit.
Okay.
So, and they think he was possibly cooking it before he became a boarder. So.
Wow.
In the unit. B2, she was in there for about 3 years. The living room and the bedroom were high, but the child's bedroom was very low. So, the child's bedroom was like untouched. 305, she was there for a couple years, but the unit had just been redone through the re-syndication.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bathroom and the one bedroom.
Okay. So I'm just gonna add on for meth. So we had been we've been researching around, we've talked about this, some of the things coming out of New Zealand. So because I looked at the website for the meth alarm in New Zealand yesterday, I got a call from New Zealand and He wants to set up a meeting to talk to us. So FYI.
And I've been talks. I've been talking to a company out of Broomfield. Unfortunately, 7312, which is my next unit, it's too high for them. But they have developed, they said, a foam cleaner where they go through and they spray the whole unit with this foam, and it basically cleans all the porous surfaces. And these would be ones measuring in like the 1 to 500 range, and it should be able to clean it with not having to rip out all the cabinetry and everything else to get into compliance. They're based out of Broomfield. They're working with another company out of Arvada, so we're gonna maybe look at that going forward, if we have another one that tests in those range, that maybe that would be easier than reconstructing these units if it's just a deep, deep clean with this foam.
Yeah, it just depends on the cost.
Yeah, so that's what we're freebie
to show us that it works.
Yeah. I wouldn't take that on the alarm too. Like, so, are you gonna prove that it works?
Yeah, because with the alarm, like with the whatever smoke alarm type ones, we were like, unless you're gonna put some in our and do like a demo and a test run, we don't really want to invest.
Well, how do you? Yeah. How long are you gonna have to wait for it?
Yeah. So I'm waiting to get more information.
He stays not long.
Right. So I'm waiting for more information from them on that. And then I found the company that makes our AccuMeth test that we do the wall swipes with. They now have a little device that you basically reads the swipes, but will give you the level within like 1/10 of it. So I'm looking into that and the cost and the it's through AccuMeth. It's the same company. It's a little black box that they have.
Make sure that we talk to Souter and Dane.
Okay.
So we can, if we're going to do it, let's just do it holistically.
Okay. And I talk to Dane all the time. I report my own meth units because Boulder County's trailing. So as soon as I get test results in, I'm sending them to code enforcement, letting them know I have another down unit. So they're helping me track them because the county's backlogged, I guess, with all these and keeping up with them. So on these meth units, I did have a CHAFO reached out to me for a meeting because we seem to have a lot and they wanted to know why. And so I talked to Sarah and Dave with the police department, and they said that we're actually, because we're, LHA is paying attention to their crime free reports, and this is what I told CHAFA, is that if we get a notation that there's meth in it, by law we're supposed to do something about it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of landlords are ignoring it, and Sarah said she's starting to see that through the crime free program, that there'll be a call with something with meth, but then the landlord doesn't do their due diligence. Mm-hmm. So when talking to CHAFA, what they're going to do, because we are on top of it, I send them monthly reports where we're at, I send them the construction updates, everything, so that they can see how we're moving through each unit. Mm-hmm. That though they have to report the down units at the end of the year, they're not going to report them until they come back online, so that they go in as corrected 8823s and not an open 8823.
So basically, we traffic called us saying, looks like you guys have more meth units than most, and we go, we're actually being incredibly transparent and addressing it. And so that is very indicative of their appreciation, I think, that we are trying to do the right thing.
So, I mean, the risk would be of landlords is that doing anything, they're renting out a unit that has high test results and they're not even testing for it.
Because once you acknowledge it, you have to remediate. You have to do something in there.
Right.
Yeah. Like they're banking on their tenants are not going to sue them.
Right.
So they're going to get away with it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why you're seeing the rise in these meth kits on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Is like, I wouldn't, if I rented a place, first thing I would do is get these meth tests and go in and eat.
Even hotel rooms, I was thinking last time, week when I was traveling, I'm like, I always need to get some personally to carry to test hotel rooms because you never know anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions on the occupancy?
I just have one, and I just want to word this correctly. One of the, you will remember in our interviews that there was a person who needed help. Did we reach out to that person?
Leah.
Yes. What was her name? Remember who she thought she was applying for housing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I can't recall her name off the top of my head.
Oh, we don't know her name.
Just right.
Because maybe something that she could work in one of these waiting list things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that, what did we do, Lisa? We took her phone number to
Diana,
and Diana reached out to her, our admin reached out to her because that's, she gets a lot of similar calls, and so she reaches them out, gets them in touch with our recovery resource people. I'm sorry, my words are not working there. Did you gather what I was going for?
Yeah, so Diana was working and referred to her with this middle referral of senior services in Longmont if she's not a current resident, to work with them to help get housing here in Longmont as well.
Okay.
Good, thanks.
Brief property updates. Not a lot's happened, but we've had a lot of bingos. We did year-end bingos at all the properties. Killer event. I'd say most properties had anywhere from a 40 to a 70% turnout. This room was packed on both sides around the corner. Sweets yesterday, people were standing at the pony wall with bingo cards because there was no more sitting room. So just a great event. Had a lot of donations from local businesses, and we're still picking up more donations that they said just use for raffle prizes and stuff going into the new year. Some of the Post Chicken donated, The Roost, Pump House, Jefe's Taco, Tangerine, a lot of restaurants, Crackpots donated gift bags. And there's still more to pick up. So mass emailed one morning and got a great response from the city, local businesses. So awesome. Even piercings and eyebrow tattoos.
But that's like,
those
were popular.
Tell me who's doing the eyebrow tattoos, because my wife has alopecia. Mm-hmm. And so she had to do that, but she can't find the lady left long by.
Yeah, her name's Jessica. I'll get you her contact.
And you gotta make sure they're certified.
Yeah,
they're tattoo artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's at one of the tattoo shops here.
Okay.
They were really, I would just say, the team really came out for that, and the businesses were so excited to do this. So
good. And so most of them said, contact us whenever you want to do this again, and we'd be happy to, support Longmont. So
awesome.
We're excited. And then we filled in with a lot of the smaller little, regular bingo prizes, mid things, but we used a lot of the gift cards and everything for the blackout prizes. And we were like, okay, let's do another round. And they were like, yeah. And they were just cheering each other on and just the support in the room. It was, Jean participated. It was a blast. And we had AMN over at Aspen Senior, and it was, I think, great for those who turned up because it was after the difficult week at AMN, and they felt that they were, though we didn't have a lot show up, they reached out to her and said, thank you for inviting us. This is what we want. We haven't had this in years. Mm-hmm. We want to be part of the community and get back to doing stuff with the seniors. So,
And I think we can make swag that just says, one more ball. Call one more ball.
That's what they're all like, one more, just call one more. So it was just a lot of fun for my team. We had a lot of staff out sick, but I had a bingo team. So my two assistant managers, and Andre and I, went around to every property doing these bingos. So.
And we just got the bingo equipment back.
Yes. I made Corinne, it was so funny because Corinne and I counted every ball last night to make sure Ray got all the balls.
That was awesome. That was totally awesome.
Via shopping transportation, we're seeing increased signups and more participation. We're still working out a few kinks, but we've had three rides. So, and Thursday's going to be the fourth ride. So. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got most of that. We've kind of developed some systems in place. We bought more bags to just meet Via's requirements and what our residents want. Let's see. The suites, our calls for service, public safety are still remaining low. I think I've not even seen a call in the last week and a half there. We've got the two meth units going through mediation. I did list this, but we did a Narcan training with the residents there. A Way Forward, right here on Kauffman, came in and did a training and provided Narcan to all the residents and let them know when to use it, that it won't cause damage if you administer and they're not having an opiate overdose, but that it can work with prescription drugs, it can work with this. And they kind of went through this big slideshow presentation. Wow. And they're gonna mimic that same training at all of our properties here in 2023. And so as part of the opioid grants and everything and funding, that they get their Narcan through the county and that they are able to get into the hands of the residents here in Longmont. So
they have kits then to the
residents? Yeah, we all got Narcan. They gave me four, so I have four sitting in my office desk drawer. All my managers have it. I had all my managers take the training that day as well, and two of the maintenance guys, so that they know when and how to use it. So.
And the residents, are the residents able to use it?
Yeah, the residents went to the training and the residents got the Narcan as well.
So they can use it also?
Yes. Okay. So, and the lady was really good, Debbie, over at the Away Forward, and she like literally walked through scenarios, and they had a guy, one of their volunteers, come over and they administered Narcan to all. He laid on the floor and stuff, and they went through the whole thing like in real life. So, which I think was very beneficial for the Suites residents to see it and, you know, let them know it's okay to do this. If you see somebody and you're questioning, you know, just do it. Not much going on at Ask Meadows Senior. Still working on the flooring issues. Neighborhood, we are pending that one eviction. And Chaffa did come out a couple days after that and did a walkthrough of Ask Meadows Senior and Ask Meadows Neighborhood. They were really impressed at the turnaround of the property. We got a few write-ups at AMSA for exit signs being out. The lights weren't working, so those have all been fixed. And then a few write-ups in Corinne's unit from, it was the meth unit that was redone, and so we had to have Freedom Fire come out and just replace those sprinklers. So all those corrections, I believe, have been now submitted to CHAPA. Let's see. Everything else, I think we've kind of already gone over. And we've hired for all our positions currently, except for the building attendant. I did 6 interviews last week. I do plan on making a full-time offer today to a building attendant and possibly a part-time. So. Any questions?
Anything from you, Harold?
Yeah, just in case you hear it, there's not a lot, but we are getting a call here and there regarding the rental increases. Mm-hmm. And what's tending to show itself in this is, I think the two that we sent, it's where individuals are qualified for a 1-bedroom, but they're in a 2-bedroom. Mm-hmm. And so then their rates are going up, and working through those issues with them. But outside of like a 1 or 2, we're not hearing a lot. No. So.
And they've been voucher holders on this too. So. Their portion was increased by housing, not by LHA.
Yeah, it was the voucher that set up that created the increase, but mm-hmm. I think the meetings may work because it's been pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. So I think they covered everything else. So.
Well, you were very specific several times as to how this was going to work, so yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think the cross is on the HCV side. But it's your proof of this, you're in this, and here's this, and there you go. So, I don't know, are you hearing anything else?
No.
No. So.
Are they willing to go to a 1-bedroom, or do they want the 2-bedroom? So, I mean, is that an option that we're
hearing? Yeah, so I have one that, the last one that was reached out, she has already initiated a transfer to a 1-bedroom, which is what her voucher is approved for.
Yeah. So. I don't think any of these, there's been a couple where they just want, and it's like, I want it to better, and it's like, then you need to pay for it to better.
Sorry. And we're working through with housing as well, even if it's Boulder County, LHA, whoever the voucher holder is, because there is avenues if they're in a 2-bedroom and they do have the need for a 2-bedroom because of medical equipment, stuff like that, we can work through them and help guide them through the process.
Any other business out there overnight? So let's adjourn at 10:02 a.m.
Awesome.